Hello, welcome to The Sound of Economics and another episode of the Deep Focus podcast series from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic policy think tank. My name is Sean Gibson, I'm Bruegel's press officer, and today I'll be talking to Bruegel fellows Reinhilde Werkelers and Simone Tagliapietra, who have co-written with Gustav Fredriksson and Alexander Roth a Bruegel policy contribution assessing Europe's position in the evolving electric vehicle development scene. So hello, Reinhilde.
Hi.
Hello, Simone.
Hello.
So for any new listeners, I'll just go through once again that the Deep Focus series is an opportunity for us to look at the key messages within a piece of Bruegel research and discuss the details with the authors themselves. Now, in terms of this broader transformation that you talk about in your study that involves the electrification and the autonomous driving and sharing cars and connected cars, those are the areas you highlight. We hear a lot about this outside of perhaps the academic side of things. We can look at the onset of electric vehicles and their development. Is this something that's happening very quickly? Is it something that's when can we expect to see major strides in this for the ordinary person?
Yep. Perhaps it's important to identify that the electrification was something that was actually already since a long time developing. The electric technology was available next to internal combustion. So it really took a long time to develop, but the speed at which it is now currently being developed is much more important. And that's thanks to also the whole climate change, clean energy discussion here. And that has put a lot of power behind the electrification. And this is why, while initially electric vehicles was just evolving as an alternative to internal combustion, now, because of its strong advantages in terms of CO2 emissions, it suddenly has picked up quite dramatically here. And although we don't see it yet currently in terms of how many electric vehicles there are on the roads, the speed with which it is increasing is really important. And also, as we analyze in our policy contribution, all the different players are now much more seriously developing this other alternative. And so it's very likely that this will become continue in future at the same speed here. So it's all in terms of expectations of where it will develop. And those expectations, I think, are all very much going in the same direction of increasing the penetration of electric vehicles.
Yes, indeed. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the future scenarios on EVs deployment made by different organizations, going from Bloomberg New Energy Finance to the International Energy Agency, it's quite impressive to see how every single year any institution revises up the expectation for deployment of EVs in a huge manner. So every year, our understanding is getting better about EVs because we have more insights into the decreasing cost of batteries, for instance, about then the decreasing cost of electric vehicles to cure. And we get more and more optimistic about the future deployment. In a way, I would say that what we are experiencing today with electric vehicles, it's very similar to what we experienced some 15 years ago with solar panels. Every year, organizations had to progressively revise up the expectations about the deployment of solar panels for the simple reason that the costs were really going down massively. And we are seeing today a similar trend for electric vehicles as well.
So we understand a bit better the broader transformation that the automotive industry is undergoing. How is Europe placed within that in a global sense?
Yeah, first of all, the automotive sector is a very important sector in the European economy. We document for some countries, and of course, we all know the examples of Germany, Slovakia. In these countries, it's really very important, but also in other countries, if you really include not just only the car manufacturing, but also repairs and also maintenance, if you take all of the direct and indirect employment effects, it's really a very important sector. Also for R&D, it's the most important sector determining the European innovation landscape. And traditionally, Europe has been very strong in this sector. So it was really a leader globally, both in automotive manufacturing, sales, but also in terms of R&D. So this is why it really matters, this automotive sector and how our companies are actually doing. But to some extent, there is a worry in the sense that our strength is really based very strongly on the traditional technology paradigm of the internal combustion engine, not only the car manufacturers, but also car parts. So the whole value chain of the internal combustion, that's really the stronghold of Europe's manufacturing and also of its R&D. Although we do see now, so Europe is actually a bit lagging behind in terms of these new technology paradigms, because it was so strong in internal combustion. So most of it is actually, most of that electrification is actually coming from the US. Tesla is, of course, a very famous example, as well as China. But now also the European firms are actually trying to catch up too, and are gradually also shifting, are still very diversified. So they're not completely leaving internal combustion, but are also now switching gradually to electrification. And so the question is, can we make that switch sufficiently fast compared to our competitors?
Sure. Yeah, maybe to add on this, I think one key trend to be outlined is the fact that over the last 5 years, the situation of electric vehicles deployment in the world completely changed. If you look back at 5 years ago, the US and Europe were the leaders in terms of electric vehicles deployment. So the US at the time had something like 40% of the global share of EV registrations. The European Union had 20% and China around 5%. Over 5 years, the share of China in total electric vehicles registrations globally raised from 5% to 50%. Today, half of electric vehicles sold worldwide are sold in China. That tells you a lot about the huge market that has been created in China. Not by coincidence, if you switch from the demand to the supply side, half of the manufacturing today of electric vehicles happens in China. This is simply because the Chinese government has put in place a very solid incentive schemes to foster deployment of electric vehicles on the one hand, but also a very structured and solid industrial policy in order to force car makers to really produce the electric vehicles. It should be outlined that even the European automotive industries, take Volkswagen for instance, that are making investments into EVs, they are making these investments in China, not in Europe, for the simple reasons that production follows the demand. And the demand today is in China mainly.
Yeah, and this is why also we emphasize so much that in terms of policy, we should actually be much more ambitious here, and not just only our companies are making the transformation, but that also we should focus way more on providing the right framework conditions for developing the electric vehicle markets also in Europe here. And that means also working quite a lot on the demand side, having at least a single market for electric cars. The European market still has a potential to be as important as the Chinese market, but it requires really a very important policy push in order for this market to be sufficiently large. And so even if our companies are European companies would be moving into electric vehicles technology away from internal combustion, if we don't go on the demand side, then they will move to countries where the demand is being basically in China. Yes.
You've already touched on this a little bit, but and in the paper itself, you look at the Chinese policy case. I guess What factors would you say would be the most important in Europe's industry catching up?
So I think it's important to really have a very systemic policy approach here. So it has to be a good mix of both demand and supply related instruments here. So of course the push has to come from demand in the first place. So making sure that electric vehicles are affordable here compared to the alternative of internal combustion. Also making sure that all the necessary complementary assets like the charging stations are in place here. That's very important too. That's on the demand side. But then also on the supply side, I think it's very important that you provide the right frameworks also for the companies to restructure here, because as we already said, they are focused on the internal combustion engine, the whole value chain, and not only the manufacturers, but also the car parts providers here. And so you need to also make sure that there are enough incentives on the supply side to switch, and also to make sure that these switching and restructuring costs are not too socially disruptive here. So also making sure that there is help in training and retraining, such that this switch can actually be made much more swiftly. This switch has to be made swiftly.
Well, and then another issue is certainly the one of taxation, right? I mean, we have been seeing over the last weeks what the fuel taxation means, given the huge protests that have characterized the situation in France with the yellow jackets. And actually, taxation is one of the most powerful tools a policymaker has on its hands to really stimulate demand for electric vehicles on the one hand, but also to stimulate the car makers to produce electric vehicles on the other end. And the situation in Europe is very peculiar, because if you look, for example, at the situation of car registration tax in Europe, only 10 countries out of 28 currently take into consideration CO2 emissions of the car in the composition of the registration tax. So imagine if at the European level we can progressively work out together at the continental level a more homogeneous taxation system for transportation that foster electric vehicles, then skipping these problematics at the national level and having really a more coherent and homogeneous level playing field across Europe. That will be certainly a very powerful tool. The European member states gave recently a mandate to the European Commission to work out a new plan for digital taxation in Europe, to be homogeneous, to really speak with one voice in that field. One of our policy recommendations is exactly to do the same in transport. Why don't the member states say to the Commission, let's try to figure out a unique system at the European level for transport taxation in order to internalize the negative externalities, so the negative impact that diesel cars have on the environment, not just on the climate, but also, for example, at the same time to put in place compensation mechanisms for the poor in order to make sure that these policies are not regressive and in order then to avoid the social backlash. This is one of our key, for example, policy recommendations in this report.
I think it's also important to stress that we are not advocating for particular subsidies for electric cars or tax stimuli for electric cars. What we want is a fair price for the carbon emissions, and that's carbon taxing here, which will be beneficial for electric cars, but could also be beneficial to other technologies. So we're not particularly favoring electric vehicles here. We're just asking for sufficient, correct demand stimuli for carbon emissions here, which is technology neutral, but given that this electrification has taken off, it's very likely that this kind of general taxation will actually be pushing for electric technology, because that's now the one that most value chains are addressing.
Since next year, a new institutional cycle will open at the European level with a new European Parliament and a new European Commission, we think that as a flagship initiative, the European Union could put in place a sort of EU Clean Transport Fund, a European fund in order to provide money particularly to cities that across Europe are really moving forward in making their transport system more sustainable. That can be, for example, to incentivize and to also help the buy of electric buses or the formation of new mobility schemes and so on and so forth. And that would also have a political premium for Europe because it would show to cities, to the citizens in real life, that Europe is an additionality.
In terms of bringing Europe's auto industry up to speed, if you will, we've talked a lot about the policy side of things. Obviously, is that what has to happen first? There are things obviously that the industry itself will be able to do, but does this have to be policy led in this case? Do you feel?
Well, I think in this case it's really very important that the policy push has to come, because the reason why we care about electric vehicles is because of the CO2. That's the main reason why the main advantage over this technology over the current internal combustion. So the policy push really has to come, because this is an externality issue that the market otherwise would not have solved here. But I think it's also important that that on the company side there is sufficient capacity to really restructure, because this is not simply an easy transformation here, because it completely changes in the value chain where most of the value is created and who can actually capture that. So because we demonstrate that also in the policy contribution, because the value chain of electric cars is completely differently composed in terms of where most of the value is created here, and particularly where what's really critical is the battery technology, as we have already been saying. And the producers of that component have actually much more value in the chain. And the one who can improve on the battery technology is the one which will be able to really capture most of the value in the value chain here. And that's something that requires also a completely different design of the value chain here. And the question is whether our internal combustion value chains are also able to deal with these shifts in power as well. And there we are a bit worried that on the European side, our strength was in the assembly here, also in some parts manufacturers here. But on the battery technology here, as our data also shows in terms of currently in terms of production, we are not there. And so we really have to bet on the technology of the new battery here in order to be able to capture value in this new electric value chain.
If you take an electric vehicle, 40% of the value is the battery. If you look at the data we have in our report about battery production today in the world, Europe, it simply doesn't show up. There is no European company that is significantly playing a role at the global level. All the EV batteries production today happens in China, in Japan, and in Korea. That's it. So those are the three big countries for battery production, and Europe is not in the radar. Now, we see and we are aware of the various European initiatives, such as the Battery Alliance, that have been put in place recently. So this idea of creating a sort of Airbus for batteries in Europe. However, in our view, we should be very cautious about these initiatives, because the effectiveness of them is at least questionable. In particular, we think that as far as lithium batteries are concerned, there is limited room for maneuver, considering that China in particular has a clear competitive advantage there. What we probably might want to do at the European level is to start investing more into research and development for the new generation of batteries that will come up in the future, particularly the so-called solid state batteries, in which we can really be at the front of innovation. So instead of running after the old technology of battery, the lithium batteries, let's try in Europe to create a new ecosystem for the next generation that will be potentially the game changer in this field.
But that's something we want to explore in the next
in the next paper.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I think that about brings this episode to a close. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this installment of Deep Focus. And thank you, Simone and Reinhilde, for taking us through the research. If you'd like to look at more of Bruegel's work, we do have a range of publications and blog posts and other podcast episodes available on our website, www.bruegel.org. We hope you've enjoyed listening to The Sound of Economics. Until next time, bye-bye.